Can anybody do something that makes people on both sides of the fence feel equally stupid? The fact is, you can always trust a government of India to do it, which is precisely what Modi government has now done with their wheat export ban. So what are the two sides here? The two sides here are people who supported the farm laws, people like me, including me. We feel like idiots because the government which had brought in the farm laws has now done something which is exactly contrary to the spirit of farm laws, and which gives the critics of farm laws now reason to say, as some of them have been saying, check this tweet by Ajay Veer Jakhad, who is a farm leader, also a big time farmer, in response to one of my tweets, where he said that's the reason farmers don't trust the government with reforms. So the critics said that Modi government doesn't mean and isn't serious about reforms. It doesn't have farmers' welfare in its heart, right? We said, on the other hand, that farm laws are good. If these laws are implemented, these will take the government out of the farmers' lives. That hasn't happened. But then why should people who oppose farm laws feel stupid? They feel stupid also because now evidence is available. If evidence was needed, they can now understand the difference that farm laws would have made. If these farm laws had come in, then government would not have been able to put these restrictions. Also, then government would have been competing with other traders in the wheat market, and they would have been a buyer like any other buyer in the market. Obviously, the biggest buyer, government of India is the biggest buyer of wheat in the world. I don't know how much the Chinese buy or the government buys, or do they have other systems buying. In any case, I don't particularly trust data coming out of China, so I leave that aside. We leave it to WHO, which has this touching faith in data out of China. I don't think anybody else trusts Chinese data as much. So leave China aside. India is the second largest producer of wheat in the world. India is also the second largest consumer of wheat in the world. The largest is China. China is not purely a rice-eating country. Large population, but you also know that, you know, most of the noodles are made with wheat. So Chinese consume a lot of wheat. Both China and India produce a lot of wheat and consume a lot of wheat. So in this year, when wheat prices are zooming, wheat prices are the highest in a very long time. And this has not just happened because of the Ukraine war. Wheat prices, actually all food prices, have been rising for the past 2 years. But wheat prices in particular have been rising for the past year or so. And we've shown that to you several times, how wheat prices have gone up. And you can see this graphic. And that was the trajectory even before the Ukraine war. Ukraine war came on 24th of February. That's when Putin invaded Ukraine. There was still enough time left for the wheat harvest. So any smart buyer, particularly the biggest buyer in a market by far, that is government of India, with the deepest pockets, should have been able to call the market. Should have been able to call the market to say that, look, now prices will go up. So I should also up my prices. Now, even if you're afraid of upping your MSP, that is minimum support price, the simple way was to offer a bonus for this year, and government has done that offer enough, that this year situation is like this, maybe 200 rupees, 300 rupees per ton, or maybe 500 rupees of bonus, per quintal of bonus. That wasn't done. The government kept the minimum support price to where it was fixed in September last year by the Agriculture Cost and Prices Commission. September last year was a long time off. Now, what does a buyer do? The biggest buyer has to see the market, has to anticipate the market. Now, you don't anticipate the market, again, because your laws are not reformed. If the laws were reformed, maybe they would have been a wheat futures market. You would have known what price it was going to be and anticipated it. But no, you blinded yourself because the farm laws were not there. Again, if the farm laws were there, private sector would have been freer to buy from the farmers. Farmers would have been freer to sell to the private sector. And it would not have been this easy for the government to impose a trade ban using the Foreign Trade Act. So that is the reason opponents of farm laws should also feel as stupid as people like us do, with one difference. that we at least can claim some vindication. We can claim the claim some vindication in the sense that, see, if the laws were there, then this would not have happened. Nevertheless, what was the point of those farm laws? The point of the farm laws was to decouple the farmer from the government, or decouple the farmer from politics, and couple the farmer with the markets. In this case, withdrawal of the farm laws have prevented or have denied the farmer the privilege of being coupled with the market. At the same time, it's become doubly, he's become or she's become doubly recoupled with the government. And you are now seeing the consequences. So you have people getting very angry. You have farm leaders, not all farm leaders oppose the farm laws. Some farm leaders were very supportive of the farm laws. Among them is Anil Ghanwat, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his name correctly. Anil Ghanwat, who is the head of Shetkari Sanghatana, which is a farmers organization based in Maharashtra. He's written an article for us, an opinion piece for the print, of which I'll share a link with you, and also you will see the headline and the front page on our screen. He has said that this is a case of government following the formula of, with the farmer, heads I win, tails you lose. So what does he say? He says, in a civilized world, government does not steal the property of its citizens. So what the farmers have grown, that is wheat in this case, is the property of the farmer. Government can't confiscate it unless it's a confiscatory government. But we are not living in the times of Alauddin Khilji, right? His was a confiscatory government with farmers. A modern government is not supposed to be confiscatory, and that's the point he's making. He says that in our country, bonded laborers are also treated better than farmers, because farmers are today being forced to produce what the government wants them to produce, to sell where the government wants them to sell, which is at confiscatory monopolist mandis, and also sell to who the government wishes them to sell. So farmers have been denied this power of getting higher pricing because export markets have opened up. And the best wheat prices in 10 years, benefit of that is being denied to the farmer. I know there are other sides of the argument, and I will mention those to you as well, because that is cut the clutter. That is the spirit of cut the clutter. So he says, very importantly, that government is now privileging urban consumers, and to keep food prices low for them, it is stealing from the farmers, and that is how it uses the farmers as bonded laborers. And he says that they are not just stealing from the farmers to privilege the Indian consumer, they also seem to be stealing from Indian farmers to privilege the consumer in other countries for political reasons, because government makes an exception in their notification. They say this cannot be exported with some exceptions. The exceptions include the needs of neighboring and other vulnerable countries, which means the government will use this wheat now for their own diplomatic purposes, but the farmer will not get the benefit from it. And then he says that, look, while we've been talking of farm laws and reform, and government came up with farm laws, in fact, if you see the executive action by the government, it's all been contrary to the spirit of farm reform laws. For example, the forward trading in chana was banned in August 21 by SEBI. In mustard, it was banned in October, November 21 would have been the time when rabi mustard was being planted. So October 21, forward trading in mustard was banned. Then wheat, soya and moong, these were banned in December. So the farmer had no way of knowing how to anticipate the price of what I will produce. Now, as we go into further discussion, look at some basic data. Look at how much wheat does each country consume, the big consumers. You can see the whole list that we take from Statista. But China, about 14.5 crore tons per year. That is 140.5 million tons per year. EU, that is European Union, all the countries, that's a lot of countries, about 10 crores, 10.8 crores, so closer to 11 crores. India, 10.4 crores. Again, that's an important number. India's production over the past few years have been upwards of 100 million tons, that is upwards of 10 crores. When India goes above that, then India also exports some. So India has never been a big exporter. See the data. you will find that India is by no means the biggest exporter in the world. India is by no means among the top five also. In fact, there are many other countries which export a lot more than India, the biggest exporter in the world. And that's another reason why prices are going up this year is Russia. Now, Russia exports almost 40 million tons per year. EU, again, all the countries of EU together, 35 million tons. Australia, I'm giving you ballpark, this is like the average of the previous 3 years. Australia, 25 million tons. US, 22.5 million tons. So Ukraine is 20 million tons. So between Ukraine and Russia, 60 to 65 million tons have been taken out at this point from the global markets. But, you know, we have to keep it in mind that situation will not remain like this forever. And it's not as if they are harvesting their wheat at the same time as we are harvesting our wheat. Their wheat will be harvested a few months later because their wheat is still green. So it's quite likely and possible, because farmers never stop working, that 2-3 months later, all the supply will come in. And the benefit that Indian farmer would have got from high prices right now will not be available to them going ahead. Again, if you look at wheat consuming nations, after India comes Russia, which is about 40 million tons, and then US, 30 million tons. So India is among the biggest producers, among the biggest consumers, but has never had so much surplus that it can spray exports all over the world. In fact, at the best of times, India's contribution to global exports, global wheat market, has been about 2%, 3%, but average has been below 1% all these years. So India doesn't have that much wheat to spare. So first of all, government of India boasted all over the world that we have all this wheat coming up and we will feed the world. Will be andatas of the world. It isn't like that. India exports a lot of food products. India also imports a lot of food products. If anything, India's imports by value are more than India's agricultural exports, because India imports a lot of edible oil. In fact, a bulk of edible oil. It also imports a lot of pulses, dals, and a lot of other agricultural products also. So that was an empty boast. At best, India would have been able to export maybe 10, 15, maybe 20 million tons. And even then, India's buffer stocks would have been good enough to last out this season until the next crop. Now, the fear that's been expressed is, the supporters of the ban say that because there was a global shortage of wheat, global cartels were buying from Indian market and holding wheat, not in India, but holding it elsewhere. And those had to be cut to size. That had to be prevented from happening, because they by giving higher prices could have vacuumed out wheat supplies from India. Now, once again, if they were paying the higher price, put the Indian farmer in front of them. You don't want them to pay higher price and take India's wheat away. So why doesn't the government of India pay higher price, the same higher price, just 10 rupees more than what the foreigner is offering, to keep the wheat in India? Then government would have paid the price to prevent that wheat from being taken out. What the government has now done is, by imposing the ban, they are getting the farmer to pay the price for not letting this wheat go overseas for holding. Why should you put that monkey on the farmer's back is the question. And that is something that opponents of farm reforms have to now reflect on. That everybody talked about MSP, 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 minimum support price. Those of us who said that MSP is being glorified unnecessarily always argued that MSP is not minimum support price. If you use the MSP to decouple the farmer from the market, then it becomes the maximum selling price. And if it is not the maximum selling price, which means if the farmer is able to sell at a price higher than the MSP, then the government comes in either with an export ban or when the prices are going up, like onions, like tomatoes, things like that, when prices are going up, how does the government respond? Government responds by flooding the market with imports. So governments use executive political power to privilege the urban consumer. Why? Because the urban consumer owns the TV channels. Owns in the sense that they watch the TV channels, and it's those TV channels which then put up middle class people saying, oh, मेरी आँख से आंसू आता है, प्याज इतना महंगा हो गया, tears in my eyes because onions become so expensive. The farmer doesn't get on there. Farmer only gets on there when the farmers come protesting to the borders of Delhi or blockades Delhi. And then the same lot speaks supposedly in favor of the farmers and against farm reforms. The fact is that farmer in India is a victim of the lack of farm reforms. So here is the essential contradiction, which is that what is inflation for the common person, man, woman, for the middle class, urban middle class, is actually what is terrible inflation for them is actually a wonderful market situation for the farmer. That's a contradiction. Government now has to handle that contradiction. Government should handle that contradiction by paying the price, by subsidizing the consumer, but not out of stealing it from the farmer, which is precisely what's happening. The monkey of inflation or inflation control should not be put on the poor farmer's back. If the government doesn't like it, if politicians don't like inflation because it leads to too much noise on television channels, then they have to pay for it. They cannot deny the farmer what is their due price and not indulge in a confiscatory approach to political economy. And that is the tragedy of Indian farming. And once again, this wheat debacle shows us how serious this problem is. That's why, once again, what does this episode teach us? It teaches us, if you draw two lines and the answer to the question, to the equation, is that government should be in the market. Farmers should be coupled with the market. Government should be in the market as a buyer like any other buyer. Government has deep pockets, so government should compete with other buyers, pay the farmer competitive price. And if the government is then worried about inflation going up for middle classes and others, government can subsidize the consumer. Government cannot force the farmer to subsidize the consumer, because that amounts to extortion. And that is the reason farmers in India never get rich. There is a lot of nonsense floating in the air. The capitalist farmers, capitalist aartis, they make hundreds of crores of rupees. No Indian farmer is making hundreds of crores of rupees. Farmers in India cannot become billionaires simply because farmers in India generally are kept divorced from their economics and from the market. So once again, this underlines the wide-ranging consequences of bad government policies and bad politics. And having talked about a debacle, we should also talk about a glorious victory. So Indian men, for the first time in history, have become world champions at badminton. Thomas Cup is the world championship of badminton, a bit like a FIFA World Cup in football or an ICC World Cup in various categories in cricket or Davis Cup in tennis. Thomas Cup was set up, it was an idea by George Allen Thomas, who was a leading badminton player. He was British, he was a leading international player in early 20th century, and he saw the Davis Cup come up and the World Cup, Football World Cup come up, and he thought badminton should also have something. So that's how Thomas Cup came up. Since then, in 73 years, since then, India had never won Thomas Cup. India had not even reached the semi-final of Thomas Cup. And there was a reason for that. The reason was that India often had a star. India had Prakash Padukone, of course, who in 1980 won the All England Open Championship, which is like the individual world championship of tennis. Again, Pulela Gopichand in 2001. He won the same championship, All England Open Championship. That's again individual championship. In between, there were other male players and similarly female players, Saina Nehwal, PV Sindhu. Women have a different championship called Uber Cup. Uber Cup was named after another British woman player, top woman player called Betty Uber. So women have that championship. Again, for women, we've had one star at a time. So when we had Saina Nehwal as world number one for once, which was a great moment, we did not have a team to win Uber Cup. Same for men. This time, these great, brilliant men have come together. So three singles players, that is Lakshya Sen, H.S. Pranoy, Kidambi Srikanth, and then doubles players. And see all their names and pictures and some pictures also of celebrations. They've got together and, you know, it's a five-match tie, which means three singles and two doubles. So you have to win three of the five. And these brilliant men have won first three. So they finished it in three straight matches. And that's why it is something for India to celebrate. Because, you know, Davis Cup tennis, there was a time in the 60s, India was very strict, 60s and 70s, India was very strong in Davis Cup tennis because India had more than two players. Because Davis Cup used to have two singles, one doubles, and then two reverse singles, which means people who played singles against each other on day one, then flipped. So if A played B in the next match, A played B and C played D. In the next match, A played C and D played B. Thomas Cup is not like that. Also, then you need a doubles team. So same people can, if you had three good players, you could still rise to the top in Davis Cup, but not in badminton. Badminton, you need different players, which means for any tournament for you to win, you have to have a team at least of seven great champions. And that's what we had this time. The Davis Cup, in case you want to know, the highest level to India, to which India reached, was what used to be called the challenge round. That's after you won the finals, then you challenged the previous year's winner. And that happened in 1966, when a great Indian team of Ramanathan Krishnan, Premjit Lal and Jaideep Mukherjee reached the challenge round and then lost to Australia. So this time, this team hasn't lost. They've got to that level at badminton and won. So three cheers for them.